Sanders, it ended up swinging radically right with Trump. But the Democratic establishment has completely discredited itself. The party is ripe for takeover. This isn't over in the U.S. It shouldn't be.
Alan Nairn, we're going to do part two of this conversation after the broadcast. Thanks for joining us. Alan Nairn speaking to us from Dili, East Timor. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now!
You're listening to WHFR Dearborn. Coming up next is our special program of a special edition of the new WHFR Journal, our local public affairs show. It's our 2016 election wrap-up. So stay tuned for that. Coming up right after I say you're listening to WHFR Dearborn, the station making waves, WHFR.FM. Hello and welcome to another edition, a special edition of the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views for Dearborn and the surrounding area. My name is Jay Koronik. I'm station advisor here at WHFR.FM and also host for the new WHFR Journal. Happy to be with you today. And in the studio is our special guest to help us analyze and give you a little background of especially the local election results, a person who's written editorial opinions strongly, strong opinions, well expressed for the Dearborn Press and Guide and other places. I don't know if we had coverage in News Herald also, but the Press and Guide anyway. Regan Ford is here. Welcome, Regan.
Well, thanks, Jay. It's a pleasure to be here. Hello to all the listeners.
Right. Welcome back, too, because this is your second visit, so the chair is not quite comfortable yet, but maybe. Okay. Let me explain to our listeners the format for today. We're going to start with first of all, I have to say, we do know and respect Veterans Day and Armistice Day, which was officially the end of World War I. Interestingly, same date. Okay. And also the death of musician, songwriter, poet Leonard Cohen, who was mentioned significantly on Democracy Now! In the hour preceding this show. And I'll be closing with one of my favorite songs by Leonard Cohen at the end of this hour. But back to the election wrap-up, we're going to begin with the numbers, especially ones that you may not have heard because they're not always communicated or certainly not up front in the headlines. The numbers for the City of Dearborn races and also comparing them with the percentages of for the candidates at the national, state, and county level, wherever appropriate. There was at least five areas of interest to us locally: the 15th district representative to Michigan, the 12th district U.S. representative, and the 19th district judgeship. School board had several members added, three elected, in fact, and the two millages that were on the ballot for us. So one was Wayne County only, another was a four-county millage package. We want to talk about those and give you some of our opinions. So up front, I'm saying what I usually sneak in sometime during the show, that all opinions expressed in the show are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford College, faculty, staff, administrators, students, board of trustees. Although we do thank everyone for allowing us to speak our opinions, we're going to try to be fair. And of course, if I say anything that's not fair really wrong, that's why Regan is here, and vice versa. So that's the game we're going to be playing anyway. If we have time, we'll also let you know some opinions that I think were significant, like the opinions on the election result from the Arab American News, which just appeared this morning on their website. and Jack Lessenberry, and a few others. So let's get started looking at the numbers. I'll just start reading these, Regan, and you can jump in if you want to. First of all, in the city of Dearborn itself, and this, by the way, these numbers are the final numbers. Okay, this is after absentee votes were counted, and there was a lot of them. So we want to indicate that that made a big difference in at least one race, the absentee ballots. And I'm not reading from the early numbers on election night. I'm reading from the complete numbers that appeared early the next morning. Okay, so first of all, I have to say, I'm always proud when I can say this, is that voter turnout was very good in this area. Over 64% of registered voters. There's 61, in case you wanted to know, well, how many registered voters in Dearborn? It's a city, the last census we had just under 100,000 people. We might have more now. I think we've probably grown a little bit in population since the last census. That was 7 years ago, after all. But 61,829 registered voters, and 61% voted. So that's pretty good. That's about 40,000 some voters turned out. Straight party votes, well, you know, that's not as important anymore. In fact, out of the 40,000 voters, only about 20,000 voted straight party. So only 50% of people are using the straight party. And I don't know. Do you have a comment?
Yeah, if you look at the broken down by precincts with the straight party ticket, it seems in the east side of Dearborn, which would be the more Arab ethnic community, they voted straight party ticket a lot, if you look at the breakdown on the precinct, much more so than voters on the west side. And I don't have the reason for that. I'm just, you know, reading them as we see them. But on the west side, people were more likely to vote for individual candidates. But if you look on the east side, it was a lot more straight party ticket over there. I'm not sure the reason why, but they voted more as a block, it seems.
Well, it's slightly easier to do that. I had a question when I went in that I didn't think about until I went in, and everybody looked at me like I was crazy. But since our balloting system is to blacken an oval for the candidate you're voting for, or if you're voting on a straight party ticket. So my question was, well, if I blacken in straight party, and then I blacken in, let's say, a different party candidate further down, what's going to happen? How's the computer going to figure that out? And they told me, and it's interesting, my question, that same question, was repeated several times while I was voting. Other people, not hearing me, but they came up to the desk and said, well, how does that work out? I mean, it seems like a contradiction that your whole ballot would be invalid if you blackened in straight party and also blackened in a different party candidate later on. Of course, when in the olden days, and they reminded me, well, we haven't done the machines in years, but you could pull down a lever for straight party and then flip up, because then all the little levers for that same party would also go down on the machine, and then you could just flip up the ones you wanted to change. But they said, no, the computer knows if you pull down straight party but you still voted for a different party later on, it'll let that happen.
And I often wondered, maybe you know the answer to this. I never vote straight party. I vote for the candidate sometimes as a Democrat, sometimes as Republican. Mm-hmm. But say you're a Democrat and you vote straight party, what happens when you get to the nonpartisan races? What happens when you get to school board and the judge? Do you have to fill those?
You have to do that. And that's the problem, is some people just go in and do the straight party thing, and then they don't worry. They don't do anything else. Maybe they think they voted for everything. But no, the nonpartisan races, like for judges, and the ballot proposals are not included, so they didn't vote for them if they voted straight party alone and nothing else. So that's unfortunate. I did think it was nice at my precinct that they were reminding everyone, don't forget to turn over the ballot, too. You know, after you darken in the circle in the front, because in the ballot, that was the 19th district judge race and the two millage proposals.
Yep.
So, but I thought that was good. So I think it's good if the poll workers remind people about certain things like that, even if they don't ask. And at my precinct, you were in Dearborn too, I bet, Regan. I know you're a resident here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What sort of wait did you have at the poll to vote?
You know, early in the morning, I was a local supporter at Gene Hunt, so I actually worked a poll at Edsel Ford, which is my precinct. And I was there at 7 a.m., and I've worked the polls before, and the turnout was you know, it wasn't a steady line, but it was much, you could tell that there was a lot more people than normal. I would say the turnout in our area was up, and it was good to see, you know, people were more enthusiastic. There were people coming who were asking questions where it was clear to me that they had never voted before. You could just tell. Mm-hmm. One gentleman came up to me, and it was early on, it was probably 10 after 7, and I handed him a Gene Hunt, you know, a card, you know, vote for Gene Hunt, what have you. And he was in a mechanic's outfit, and he goes, Gene Hunt, is he running for president? I said, no, he's running for judge. He goes, can I vote for president here? I said, sure, you can vote for president. To me, that's a guy that's never voted.
He could have written in Gene Hunt for president. But
yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Actually, I was surprised that the number of write-in votes for some of these offices was larger than votes for actual candidates of one party or another. So it varied. But we have a lot of people that are still doing write-ins, which have no hope ever of getting one. Well, I take that back. The current mayor of the city of Detroit won by write-ins.
That's true. Very good point.
Maybe in the primaries. Was it the final vote? Was it a write-in or is it a He somehow was taken off the ballot, and there was a big to-do and a lot of press. Everybody heard about that. But I think either was the primary, but Mayor Duggan, the write-in votes actually made it happen for him, whether it was in the primary or the final election. So it's not impossible, but it's pretty much impossible. So straight party is interesting, and there is no contradiction with voting later for someone else. And yes, you do have to remember to vote for the nonpartisan and the, of course, the ballot proposals. Okay, well, how did in Dearborn split for president and vice president? Trump-Pence got almost 31%. Clinton-Kaine, however, got 63%. Now, of course, this area, Wayne County, is always thought of as being Democratic by a large number. However, Dearborn, I remember in its history, we voted for Republicans as our representative to the Michigan House.
Gary Wojnarowski was voted in as a Republican
at
first.
And before him, it was man that became Judge Runco. William Runco was a Republican, too, and that was way back, but I'm just saying he was a Republican also. Warnchuk, of course, became a Democrat when he was term limited and had to find another job. And, of course, now he is with Wayne County, and he is there, well, the head of the commissioners, anyway. They appointed him that. I don't know if he gets extra pay for that or not. Anyway, but let's look at some of the other races, because that was a big amount. But, of course, the difference in many races, not here in Dearborn, is the votes for the third-party candidates. So Johnson Weld, the Libertarian candidates for president, got almost 3%. And the Green Party, that's Jill Stein and Imaku Baraka, a civil activist that I didn't know the name of before he was became the vice presidential candidate. Anyway, they got over 2%. So that's a lot more for third-party candidates in Dearborn, and I think that's certainly the case nationwide, because the national vote, do I have it here? I have it somewhere anyway. We'll talk about that in a minute, just kind of ironic. Let me see here. What else I wanted to say about that? The write-in vote for president was over 1% with a variety of names. I would love to see printouts of what some of those names were. I mean, some might be Gene Hunt, but, you know, others, who knows. Our 12th district representative, not too big a surprise here. The name Dingell, whether you thought it was still John Dingell running or Debbie Dingell has been reelected with almost 69% of the votes. Jeff Jones, Republican, only came in with 24% of the votes. Tom Bagwell, Libertarian, got almost 2%. Dylan Kalawarts, Green Party candidate, got 1.25%. And Gary Wolkowitz, however, now this is one of the interesting stories here, locally anyway, is the Working Class Party, WCP. Gary Wolkowitz was their candidate for the 12th District, and he got almost 4% of the vote.
Wow.
And that's amazing. The other, let me just jump to, there it is. Well, just in the local numbers. Okay, the state number is not as significant, but locally, the Working Class Party only had 3 candidates on the whole state ballot, and one was the 12th district. I just mentioned Mr. Wolkowitz, who got almost 4% opposite Debbie Dingell. more than the Libertarians, more than the Green Party people, almost double what they got. And for the State Board of Education, Michigan State Board of Education, Mary Ann Herring, which was who was another candidate for from the working class party, she got 2.5% of that vote. Now, that's just the vote in the Dearborn area, but that's where she's somewhat well-known. She ran for our Board of Education, along with someone else, too. They sort of had the same agenda, and they were running together, and I can't remember the name. Maybe it was Gary Wolkowitz, if he was a Dearborn resident or not. But anyway, so I, you know, and that they, I had Mary Ann Herring on the show 2 weeks ago, and she talked about her candidacy, and she talked about how she was campaigning at various auto factories when the shifts were changing, and she was going door to door, and how they, to get on the ballot, they had to get like over 60 volunteers to help them, because they needed 30-some thousand, but they worked signatures on a petition. They got over 55,000 just to be safe. And so I think that's an amazing grassroots story. Whether or not you agree with the Working Class Party, they admit that they're socialists or socialist-leaning, but they got, she made a big difference locally in terms of the numbers that they got. Now, they didn't win, no. But I'm just saying, if you work hard, you can make a difference, even though you may not win. You can get a lot of people listening to your message and make that difference.
Yeah, and you answered my question. I was going to ask you, what was the Working Class Party's platform? I wasn't familiar with them. I was wondering if we knew that.
Yeah, well, and it was, a class-based thing. I had a libertarian on from 12th District race, Tom Bagwell, and he just blurted out. I told him not to say these kinds of things because I mentioned the other candidates for the office. They said, "Oh, the Working Class Party, they're just communists," and I didn't think that was right. And so I asked, of course, Mary Ann when she was on the show to clarify that, and she sees herself firmly as a socialist militant. And I said, maybe you shouldn't use that term militant these days, because they might think you're going for a gun, you're part of a militia, you know, the similarity of words. She said, no. In other words, she's very activist oriented, socialist activist. She wants to counter the inequity, difference in salaries. The opportunities for the rich are a lot better than for the poor in this country, and there's educational differences and all kinds of inequities, and so it is a class-based criticism, which you could say was Karl Marx's angle on creating the idea for communism and putting it into practice. But in fact, very grassroots, definitely she was campaigning with people who had a lot of upset and need these days. And I suspect there was a lot of crossover in the vote for Donald Trump, too, about that same sort of anguish, the same sort of anxiety in our country. And there's a New York Times editorial that says it pretty well that I won't try to put my own words to that. But I'm just saying is that feeling by the working people, the working class, you want to call it that. And I said, does that mean you're not speaking for the poor or the homeless? And she said, no, of course not. Okay, no. But it's just a convenient term that they happen to choose. And they did very, very well, which means that anybody can do really well. And I want to jump down next to the state representative, 15th District. Yes, Abdullah Hamoud did get almost 62% of the vote. Terrence Guido Guerin, as he pronounces it, the Republican, got a little over 38% of the vote. However, if you take a look there between the 12th district, just the local votes in Dearborn for the 12th district, the Republican Jeff Jones only got 9,200 votes, but Terrence Guerin got 13,452 votes. So he did a lot better than the Republican Jeff Jones. So that wasn't a matter of Republicanism. It was a matter of something else.
Yeah, it's no surprise Hamoud won. You know, he was going to win. But for those who don't know Terrence Guerin, he's the Rhino. He's the wrestler, the WWE wrestler. And he's a great guy. He really is. And I was really surprised at how good he did, because he, for Republicans, as you pointed out, he got more votes than Trump. He got more votes than the other Republicans. But he does a lot in the community, and he was already well known. He had a grassroots campaign. He was knocking on doors. So I was pretty proud of Rhino, and if any of his supporters are listening, I'm going to tell those guys, good job. I mean, he was fighting an uphill battle in this district, and they did very well. And the great part about it is, I don't know if you saw this or not, but Garen and Hamoud, who ran a great campaign as well, they became almost kind of buddies.
I understand that Hamoud was working out at the same gym in Wyandotte that Garen was working out.
They had a few forums where they both spoke, and it was funny. They took pictures. They would hug and embrace at the end. It was kind of funny. They were buddies.
And yet, in terms of forums, Garen chose not to be part of any forum on from the League of Women Voters, and he also chose not to be on our show here. We're going to give him 30 minutes. Maybe what he had to say was, which was just three little paragraphs that he repeated several times in several mailings, maybe that's all he had to say. I hate to say that, Terrence, but we invited you on the show to go in depth. Now, we did come by homecoming. We grabbed him. We got 10 minutes, but it wasn't an in-depth interview. He said the same three paragraphs. I wasn't there at the time but that he came by. But yes, he's done a lot in the community for 27 years. He's been a WWE wrestler, which I don't know if that's a recommendation or not, but he has a lot of fans. A lot of people that have followed his career. And yes, he was not a career politician. He made a lot of that. That's often a selling point these days anyway. And so, yes, I give him credit too. He only had two mailings. Only one mailing for to Holmes in Dearborn for the primary and two mailings here. It's interesting, in the primary, though, he beat another candidate, Paul Safaya, who really had a campaign. He showed up at all the forums and debates and came on the show for 30 minutes. He wasn't afraid of me. And I don't know. I have a sense also that he might have had more Republican Party mainstream support.
Yeah, you're right. And that goes to show you, nothing against Rhino. He's a great guy. I like Rhino. But I think that it goes to show you that name recognition means a lot, especially in local races. And as we see, political, national elections too. But Sophia did have a little bit more to say, and he was seen a little bit more. To Rhino's credit, he's busy and he flies around the nation. And, if you're going to run, you got to run. But, name recognition, I would say, in that race.
Well, we're giving him a lot of credit, even though he lost, 62% for Hamoud and 38% for Garen, but he did better than other Republicans on the ballot here in Dearborn. And so maybe he'll be back again. Who knows? State Board of Education, again, because it's local because of Ish Ahmed. Ismail is actually his first name, but his nickname has always been Ish because people always mistakenly thought for 40 years that his first name was Ishmael, which was a central protagonist in the book Moby Dick. But but his name is Ismail, and he'd like people to remember that, by the way, in the future. And he did get elected to the State Board of Education statewide. He got more votes than John Austin did statewide, and that was kind of the case here in Dearborn. He got for this office got 30% of the votes, and John Austin got 29%. They were the two leaders in Dearborn, and that was a similar I think breakdown percentage in terms of victories for both Ish Ahmed and John Austin. John Austin previously was the big vote getter for the Democrats for State Board of Education. And again, I just discovered this when Ish was on the show. I said, I don't know why I brought it up, how much does this pay? And he said, nothing. He says, gas money. They give you gas money. And what it is, I actually looked it up, it's $100 per diem, which means per day. And I guess you could spend that on McDonald's burgers or whatever you wanted. But they don't pay you for more than 30 days a year.
Wow.
So you can't go to Lansing very much on gas money if it's 90 miles each way and the price of gas these days, and it's going up, folks. It's amazing anybody wants to run for those offices at all. I mean, it's a statewide position. I don't know anybody that's gone from the State Board of Education to a higher job. Now, Ismail Ahmed, of course, was under the Granholm administration. He was the appointed the head of the it was the social services department in Michigan, welfare and I think it was just called Social Services. Okay, and he did that for 3 years and did a great job, of course, because of his background establishing and running the Access organization here, as well as the National Arab American Museum, too. For that office, by the way, the Libertarian Scotty Bowman has always gotten a lot of votes for the Libertarian Party, and he got 2% from Dearborn. And I think, but Marianne Herring actually got 2.5% in the Dearborn area. There's still people I talk to that think that Scotty Bowman is the former Red Wing.
That's three people now. Yeah, so did I. Right.
Okay. Well, you know, what can you do? You know, name recognition. People don't necessarily who go to vote. It's not that a lot of people are uneducated, although that's true that they're not educated specifically about who the candidates are and what they stand for. We don't do a very good job of that in our society, and except on this particular electronic medium. I understand. But at the last minute, emotionally, you vote for a name recognition. Sometimes it's an ethnic name recognition.
Yeah.
I won't give any examples, but, you know, hey, I'm Irish, I'll vote for this Irish guy or girl, or I don't care what. Other people have other criteria. For example, if I don't know, and shame on me if I ever go in and say that, I actually did more research this time, like for judges. For judges, if I don't know, I'd vote for the women. Oh, my God, why would that be? Well, you figure it out, folks. We need conciliatory mothering-type figures, but strong women, nonetheless, to be a judge. You've got to give that that sentence firmly if you think they need it. But that's crazy, too. I mean, all those are just generalizations, and they're mostly false. Let's see. Anything else locally I wanted to point to here from the city of Dearborn? Oh, yes, of course. We had to get the DeBaja Hunt race. In the evening after the votes were counted, the votes that were actually made on November 8th, Susan DeBaja won.
Yeah.
And you were telling me earlier the story about Hunt?
Yeah, we were at the, he had a celebratory party at Park Place. And for whatever reason, the city of Dearborn this year, when you looked at the results online, they said the votes were 100% in. And it was counting 48 precincts out of 48. But for those, I mean, unless you're a political junkie, you know that there's 56 precincts. But it was as if the voting was over, but they hadn't voted the absentee ballots, and it confused everybody. And even the Honorable Hunt, I should call him, Honorable Gene Hunt, even he had given a concession speech after the votes were tallied because he thought he had lost, because at the point he was down a good 1,000 or 1,500 before the absentee ballots.
Yeah, actually have that. There was 1,129 votes below Susan DeBaja before the absentee ballots were counted. And my numbers show that the absentee ballots, though, were huge, almost 7,000, at least for this office. I don't know total absentee ballots because sometimes people don't vote in every race. And the final count was, there it is right there. The final count was 17,403 for Gene Hunt, including the absentee ballots, and Susan DeBaja, 16,982. So the absentee ballots, these 6,800 were cast, it looks to me like 4,100 some went for Hunt and 2,600 went for DeBaja. So they're almost 2-1 for Hunt in the absentee ballots.
Yeah, the absentees, I'm pretty certain I can say with safety that the absentees are almost always elderly voters, I do know. It seems as if they're the older demographics. And, yeah, he did an excellent job with the absentees. They really came in and bailed him out. And it was a close race. I know Susan, she's a tough lady. She must be crestfallen to work so hard and lose by 400. But at the end of the day, Gene Hunt won. So.
Yep. Well, he had endorsements from the Detroit Free Press. Many other legal agencies. Susan DeBaja had a lot of endorsements. I think Dearborn Police and Fire, although I'm not sure how the fire department relates to the courts, but nonetheless, distinguished community group, of course. And she did campaign very hard. I do think that perhaps she didn't have her material, her ads, and she was in every paper on the front page of the Press and Guide with her ad. Later in the last month, and I think it'd be interesting to see when those absentee ballots were actually received, if they actually stamped them, how many came in like a whole month back, that is as soon as they could be put in, and how many came throughout the month? Because obviously Gene Hunt had one mailing, as he did during the primary, a different kind of negative mailing, supposedly not from the DeBaggio group. Don't know who did it. Talked about a couple drunk driving incidents that happened to him in the early 90s, almost 30 years ago.
Yeah, and you probably know this, but your listeners may not. If you, in elections, if you want to send a mailer, if you want to do any kind of advertising for a candidate or a cause, you have to register what they call a statement of organization with the county or the state. I'm not sure, one or the other. I think it depends on what seat you're running for, but nonetheless, you have to register so that the voters know where the attacks are coming from, who's paying for them, so everything's on the up and up. What we saw in the judge race, which was terrible because it undermines our democracy, as you were watching it, you were witnessing attack ads on Gene Hunt, and we had, it was a fake organization. You know, there's no statement of organization. If you followed their address, it was an empty building in Detroit. There was no way of getting hold of anybody, and they were just spending, you know, who knows, $100,000 or more on attack ads against them. And Susan's campaign, of course, said it wasn't theirs, and she's a respectable lady, so we have to take her word at it. But somebody was just attacking and attacking, and aside from the two misdemeanors he had in his youth,
which were expunged from his record, actually.
But yeah, all the other things were unproven. I can't tell you if they're true or not, but it was slanderous. If you can't prove it, it's called slanderous. And that's illegal. That's a federal crime to send those from a fake organization, and they're looking into that. And you got to get with the Michigan Bureau of Elections in Lansing. And, I mean, it's...
As you said, if you can track these people down.
Yeah.
Even. Yeah. Of course, he won, so he probably doesn't need to sue them at this point. But
right.
And I think it's libel when it's in print. So if they printed it, it would be called libel. But same thing, defamation of character.
Right.
Slander if it's spoken, and libel if it's in print, or if it's spoken over the radio or TV.
Mm-hmm.
Donald Trump was always trying to say that people were slandering him on television, when in fact there is freedom of speech and opinions are allowed. Opinions are not slander. Okay. But if people are saying it's a fact that somebody's a criminal and they're not,
mm-hmm.
if that fact is a lie, then that is definitely slander. That's defamation of candor, of defamation of character. And because we teach that to our trainees here at WHFR before they get on the air, they need to know at least what not to say that's going to cause a lawsuit. And we don't want to upset anybody by saying things that aren't true, first of all. But opinions are allowed, although we don't, except for this show, we can do opinions. But we try to be fair and balanced. And of course, I just want to remind everybody, you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. This is the new WHFR Journal. Special local election wrap-up episode. And my name is Jay Koronick, and I'm joined in the studio by the current president of the Dearborn Rotary, Regan Ford, who's not a member of the Ford family, the famous one.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, you said that before. And he's no relation to President Reagan, by the way, either, because that's the first and last name difference, and you say it differently and you spell it differently. So we got that out of the way. Good. So anyway, congratulations to Gene Hunt for that. He gave, I thought, a very humble comment in the Arab American News story about the election win. And again, what time, if you were a Hunt supporter, were you at the Park Place when he gave his concession speech?
You know, they say early to bed, early to rise. I'm
okay.
One of those guys.
Okay,
so
sure.
I came early. I came at 8 o'clock, you know, shook some hands and congratulated him, even because I thought he was going to win by a lot. It was quite a surprise.
Yeah, I checked in at 10:30, and I saw that Susan DeBaggio had won, and then I went to bed.
Yeah.
But, I mean, because absentee ballots don't, they're not usually so lopsided.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually sort of split similarly to the people that voted on that same day. But there's a lot of things that can happen, a lot of different opinions, different number of mailings. Oh, my God. I think Hunt did have the most mailings since the primary. He had at least four postcard colorful mailings. So his campaign spent a fortune, I mean a real fortune, too. DeBaggio had fewer, but I think if she did four, the last three were in the last week or 2 weeks, I think.
Yeah, I don't have the numbers in front of me, so this is hearsay, but I was told that Susan did outspend him, though.
Really?
Yep. Oh. She outspent them. Well, I don't know if it was on mailers or not.
I think it could be newspaper. The newspaper ads at the bottom of page one of the Press and Guide, that's not cheap. I don't know. Maybe their rates have gone down as people haven't been subscribing as much, but that cost a lot, certainly.
Yeah.
I did have both Gene Hunt come to my door. I wasn't in when he came by, and he said, "Sorry, I missed you," although he didn't know who I was at that point. And Susan DeVage's, I think about 12-year-old daughter came by one day a couple months ago, and then she and Susan came by my street, working the street together. I live in East Airborne area, and that was the night before the election. And I said, "Wow, one big final push for the finish." And she said, "Yeah, the last hurrah." And I don't know if she knows the literary connection to that phrase, but that's a negative sort of thing, the last hurrah. It means it's everything is ending. And she seemed, I interpreted that as she was a little depressed or feeling negative. But the next day in my precinct in East Dearborn, wow, was there... You know, all the DeBaggio people were out like crazy. Were you at precincts in West Dearborn or South area? Or
you know, I took a drive through West Dearborn, and I had some friends of mine who were in office and things, and we were talking during the day, and everybody was reporting big turnouts. I knew poll workers at other places. I only saw where my daughter goes to school at Whitmore, mm-hmm. and they had big turnouts, and then I saw, of course, the poll I was working at, Edsel Ford, and it was big turnouts. And just overall, everybody was energetic and a big turnout. And I just want to say one thing mm-hmm. about the judge race. I had the pleasure of knowing both Gene and Susan, and they're both great people. They both have wonderful families, and it was a hard-fought race. And I was actually impressed with Susan, although she lost, because she was supposed to lose by 10 or 15 points that race. And she worked and worked and worked and made it close and made everybody sweat a little bit. But, I mean, that's hard to do, you know, so you got to give her props there.
Absolutely.
I mean, Gene mm-hmm. had over 50% in the primary when he had two other competitors. Mm-hmm. So, I mean,
yeah,
that's a pretty big
lead. Yeah, he won the primary in terms of total majority of the votes or the plurality of the votes anyway, and Susan DeBaggio was number two then. So,
right.
Well, you know, there was that argument that was made by the Arab American Political Committee, which didn't support her. They supported first Abi Bazzi and then Gene Hunt. She didn't quite feel good about that, but nonetheless, one of the reasons that they had brought up is that they wanted her to stay the head of the city council, you know, the biggest vote getter in the last election. So she's like the chairperson when the council meets. And that chairperson really has a lot of power, first of all, to articulate the issues coming up and to choose people to make comments on the council and to just really direct the flow of the procedures. And I was thinking that, wow, I bet our current mayor, John B. O'Reilly Jr., was very happy that Gene Hunt won so that Susan DeBaggio, who usually sided with the mayor, would still be on the council. Because if she wasn't there, Ted Tofelsky, or is it Tom? I always confuse that. And that's the joke here at the station, because we've invited him to come on the Journal several times when he was the head of the council, and he has been busy, I guess. So I always get his first name wrong. So it's either Ted or Tom. But
no, it's Tom Tofelsky.
Okay.
He's the council pro tem, I guess you would call him.
Right.
But you're absolutely right, Jay. The council president does have a lot of pull. And if nothing else, you know, if, God forbid, the mayor were to retire or something happened to him, she would be next in line to be the mayor. Mm-hmm. After all, that's how Mayor O'Reilly
right.
became mm-hmm. the mayor.
Yeah. Right.
And so, yeah, it's a lot of pull, and there's a lot of people hoping she would stay there, like you said. So
right. Although it's the difference between a part-time job, it doesn't pay too much, but has a lot of responsibility and probably a lot of phone calls late at night, that is the head of the council, and a judgeship where, well, first, you can probably put aside your own legal practice. You don't have to look for clients anymore for your day job. And as she was a lawyer, or she is a lawyer, but you know, you'll have all those people coming to you every day in the courthouse. So that was an interesting race. It was unfortunate there was that negative campaigning, however it happened, against Hunt, but it didn't make a difference apparently, or if it did, maybe it swayed more people to vote for him. Say.
Yeah, you know, everybody, we're all big boys here. Everybody knows that elections are dirty, especially in Dearborn. They got the history of being dirty. And you got to understand, and everybody that files for office, they know that elections are dirty. But I just have a problem when there, it's that third party, not me, slanderous attacks. It's just a, when it undermines that democracy, I have a major problem with it. You know, if well, if you're going to call somebody a son of a gun, right. Look him in the face.
Just
and call
to correct
him a son
you,
of a gun.
When you say third party, he means the sort of unknown people. It's not somebody from one of the third political parties, like Libertarian or just to be clear. But it's just these unknown attacks where you can't trace down who actually said it. And even somebody did a fact check on the first negative flyer against Gene in August. And it was all bogus. It was all just made up about how he's letting criminals go. He was, you know, doing such a great job of being a defense attorney, which I think that was his job, folks. That was the idea. If he can get people off because there's not enough evidence against them, wouldn't you want that person defending you if you came up and you hadn't committed the crime? Wouldn't you want that person defending you in court? Of course you would. So, but he said, these cases that we're talking about, we don't even hear those cases in the 19th District Court. I don't know who these people are. Never seen them. Nobody even knows that the picture is the same as the name they gave. So that one was totally bogus. The DUIs are so far back that it shouldn't have been an issue anymore. So anyway, okay, moving on. Yeah. You want to know who won the Dearborn School Board election. Okay, it was the former incumbent, although he had left to try to run for another office, and it didn't work out. So Hussein Berry, who has been with the board for many years, a very familiar name and a familiar family name in the community, too. And again, I don't know how he's related to all the many other Berries in the community, but nonetheless, he was elected with 33% of the vote. And Fadwa Hamoud, who was appointed to the board when Amy Sholas took another job and had to move out of town, Fadwa has now got a full term also, along with Hussein Berry. And those are, oh my gosh, 6-year terms.
Yeah. As far as Hussein Berry goes, all those candidates, that's one of the races where I don't think Dearborn could have went wrong. Obviously, Coder is the blind student, isn't
right.
he?
Yes,
and he's,
yes.
You know, you got to give him props. I mean, look at what he's done.
Right. He's been on the show several times talking about things here at the college when he was a student here. He's now a student in political science, I believe, at U of M Dearborn. And a very talented, very capable young man. I don't think his name was all that familiar to a lot of people. And again, the recognizable names, well, certainly in the community, there's a lot of Berries and Hamouds, even if they're not all related to each other. So that was something. But both of them were incumbents, and incumbents always seem to have an advantage. Adele Mozip had a lot of signs in my neighborhood. He came in third and didn't win at almost 24%. Coder Farhat got almost 10% of that. However, there was also a shorter term election because they're, I think it's by state law, they have to sort of stagger who gets elected to the board. And so there's a sort of this partial term. And that was won by over 63% of the vote went to Jim Thorpe. And Fayez El-Khali got the rest pretty much, 36%. Okay. Mm-hmm.
As far as Thorpe goes, just a comment on him. I got to know Thorpe. He's one that I am friends with. He's a past president in the Dearborn Rotary. Wow. And I honestly told him this to his face when he said he was going to run. I said, Jim, you're not the political type. You're not the politician type. You have to brag on yourself if you're going to run. And he couldn't. You know, he's not that type of guy. And I underestimated him. He won, and I'm happy. You couldn't have a better servant, and he proved me wrong. I thought he was going to lose because he's not the kind of guy that would, you know, have to toot his own horn.
Again, name recognition. He knew a lot of people because of being part of the Rotary, and he met a lot of people along the way. Fayez El-Khali, I've never met, never heard of his name before. And so that's just the way that goes there. Also, Jim shared one of the mailings with Fadwa Hamoud. It was one of the picture postcards, and she had the left half, and he had the right half. So, although it was interesting, the picture he chose for himself was with, looked like wife and children, but he was wearing a baseball cap. You couldn't see his face. So I'm thinking, that's suspicious. You want to vote for somebody when you can't see their face? you know, you want to look them in the eye and see if they're lying to you or something. I thought, that's not a good choice for photos except showing he's a family man, you
right.
know, so it didn't, but that didn't hurt.
Right.
Nobody sees things as I do, I'm afraid, and that's good, probably, because I maybe read too much into stuff. What about the votes? Okay, the votes for millages. Well, the one in Wayne County that was to provide more funds to try to get back up to fund what funding levels were before 2008. And the only way we could do that, the state legislature wasn't moving very quickly to continue increasing support for our local schools, was to actually get our intermediate school district, as it used to be called, it's regional educational, anyway, RESA is the nickname, is that a little loophole in the law that was passed is that they could raise this money. Okay, they could raise the money themselves and split it up among all the schools in Wayne County. And they tried a couple of years ago, didn't pass, but they tried again and it passed. And in this area, and I don't know the whole Wayne County numbers, I got them here somewhere, I guess I do right here. In Dearborn, it was 57% to 43%. So a nice margin of victory, even one vote. Ask Donald Trump, is you'll take that, you know. And so I'm looking at the, where is that here? Proposals. Okay, I've got the Wayne County numbers now. I think. You have them? No, that's just for city. Because it had to be approved countywide. Well, it was. Anyway, that's the important story there. So Dearborn Schools get about $2.5 million. And as I said on the show a couple weeks ago, it was reported they didn't know what they'd do with the money. But I bet they're very quickly getting out their wish list from all the various school administrators. And of course, we hope it goes and it's money well spent. And it will bring funding levels back up, as I said, to pre-1968 amounts. And that's great. However, the much supported by every organization I know of, every professional organization, most every business organization, including the League of Women Voters, they do take positions on nonpartisan, seemingly nonpartisan issues, and they did this time. They were all for that. And in Dearborn, in fact, we approved that. 55% said yes to 45% saying no for the Regional Transit Authority Southeast Michigan levy. However, four counties had to approve of it, or the numbers votes combined for four counties. And my understanding is that Wayne, Oakland, and Washtenaw voted for it, but not enough to offset the no votes in Macomb County. So it's not happening. Now, they could come back and ask you again for the same or something similar in 2 years. But let me ask you, Regan, because you wrote a comment for the Press and Guide about, well, basically you thought that wasn't the best idea.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. It didn't break my heart that it failed. It's if we have the money and everything else in the county is going great, sure, it sounds like a great idea. Who doesn't want mass transit? But the fact of the matter is Wayne County and the Free Press, I believe, is it the Free Press or the New York Times just come out? Wayne County is the seventh highest property taxed county in the entire nation. And there's, you know, thousands and thousands. And Dearborn, ourselves, we rank in the top 1 percentile in property taxes in the state of Michigan. I mean, we're taxed and taxed. And when you look at Wayne County and you look at Detroit and you look at these areas, yeah, we're hurting. But I just didn't think putting in more buses and rails was going to drag us out of that. People want low crime, they want low taxes, and they want safety. And I think if we spent our money and raised money for those sort of things and made Wayne County a better place to live for, you know, for families and businesses, and worked on our schools, look at Detroit schools, they're in disarray. I just don't think a $4 billion plan is going to be the cure-all that they were advertising was going to be. If all the other ducks were in a row and we had the money, sure, let's do it. But the fact of the matter is we were in no position to put that kind of tax burden on an already overly taxed base, if it's enough tax words. Say that 10 times fast.
Okay, so here's my spin on it. Detroit has the worst metro transit system of any of the major cities in the United States. And I think most people would agree that it would be a good thing to have an inexpensive way for people to be able to travel around the whole region without needing to spend money on a car. This would be an advantage to people, especially who couldn't afford to buy a car, okay? And also, it's more energy efficient in many ways, and it's definitely an advantage for usually real estate. People like to buy property in places where there's a lot of public transit, even if they have their own cars, because it's sort of a backup plan. I think that's why the smart bus millage was renewed a couple of years ago, first of all. And finally, I'll let you jump back in, Regan. I always feel that money spent locally on services, city services, is money best spent. If it goes to the federal government, I'm not sure about the county or the state, but if it goes just to local areas, and this would be a regional plan, it's the best idea. Also, regional plans are the best idea for metro areas. The Detroit Water Company is now under the guidance of a regional group for the first time. And that's a good idea because they benefit. They serve all that group. And whether it's talking about rates or improvements or whatever, it's good to have that sort of plan. Back to you.
And, you know, three points, but I'll start with your one. You said that regional transit is the worst in Wayne County, right?
In metro areas in the whole U.S.
And that's a true point. Mm-hmm. But the point that I tried to make in my article is there's other areas where we're the worst, too, that are more impended. I don't know the word, but that we should work on first, I guess, in layman's terms, as we have the worst crime, where Detroit remains the most violent city. We remain the most highest taxes. Our schools remain one of the worst, despite one of the highest per pupil spendings in the. I just think there's other things to work on. And then I did a little research for my article, of course, and the mass transit, wherever they put it, and I mean everywhere, I was hard pressed to find a city or a county or a region where they didn't put in mass transit, and it's always in debt, and they're always asking for more money for it. They're always passing millages. And one of the more interesting things, real quick, is what they found is most of the people that use the mass transit are low-income commuters. But what they found is once the low-income commuter brings theirself up out of poverty and is working, the very first thing they do is buy a car and quit using it. So
obviously the answer is to prohibit the sale of automobiles. Just take care of that. No, that's a bad joke and that's stupid. But let me do my spin on things about why it probably didn't happen. First of all, Macomb County wasn't going to get a lot of, even in 5 years, a lot of additional advantage to the special services, like the quicker buses, the express bus lines they're going to put in. And in fact, there was really only three major arteries that were being developed. And I think only something up Gratiot was getting anywhere near Macomb County, if I'm going in the right direction. And so I didn't think that they felt that it meant much to them, but they had to pay a share as big as anybody else in terms of property value, that same millage percentage. And so I just think that that was a practical, realistic thing. They didn't see the advantage for them. Although, again, after 20 years and other growth, there might have been. I thought you were going to mention the other fact. Well, you did mention the other fact, is a lot of established metro transit system are having reduced number of riders.
Yes.
Which, of course, raises the question, what's going wrong there? I just visited Toronto for a few days in early August and stayed downtown, and they have every kind of metro transit you can think of. I mean, they have buses, they have mini trains, they have big trains, they have, and the buses are hybrid buses, I mean, pollution-free, you know, and there's bike lanes everywhere. I mean, when I went there 20, 30 years ago, there was no bike lanes, and now you're more likely to get hit by a speeding bicyclist than a car, I think, or a bus, and it's really congested. And driving, if you're a tourist, I try to get there quick in my car, one route, park it, and then don't use it for the rest of the stay, because traffic is, it's almost like New York City traffic or Boston, some of the bigger cities. Detroit is hardly has any traffic problems at all anymore because of the reduced population there, but the... You know, and how are they doing? Well, they're at the point where I just read the latest Toronto Life magazine issue, and they're talking about in 60 years, 50, 60 more years, people might not want to live there because of the congestion and the cost. Cost to live in Toronto are just as high, if not higher, than New York City. Of course, if you equate the Canadian dollar with the U.S. dollar, maybe it's not. Maybe they're equal, but so there's some real problems, I think, because you're going to, it was pointed out here, with all those express bus lines, you're going to cause more congestion for regular transportation in Detroit.
Yeah, and the next thing I'm about to say is strictly my opinion. I don't have anything to back it up, but one thing that is true is mass transit. There was a time in America where it was critical, a time before cars in the early 20th century, before everybody could have, you know, a chicken in the pot and a car. But one of the crazy things to me was the RTA's plan. It wasn't going to be complete for 20 years. If you think about that, that's the year 2036. And we're spending $4 billion plus on a thing that's from the 20th century. It could be obsolete by the time it's completed. I mean, think of the rate of technology with ride sharing and Zipcar, and Ford just announced they're going to make an autonomous car. You know, I mean, think of all the options. But it's very well possible, and once again, I have no proof of this, but by the time they actually complete it, it's obsolete.
Yeah. Well, again, I'm no expert on this, and it's my opinion too, but I hope in 2 years they do come back with a plan, but it's something appropriate for the future and something a little more simple to understand and more basic than just trying to copy things that were already done 30, 40 years ago in other cities that have worked, at least for a while, for these other cities. Number one, we need to fix the roads for the sake of regular cars. And that's a state issue. That's our legislature. Of course, they could pass some sort of additional income tax or something, but they really got to fix the roads if automobiles, even autonomous automobiles, are going to use them. We've got too many potholes still. We've got too many bridges to keep under repair. And we haven't even fixed the problem, much less are we at the maintenance level for our road system. Then, why don't they just expand the buses? Let's make it a regional bus system. Let's expand smart buses, which are very independent, can go wherever you need. I'm sure that can't cost as much as building onto or the plan that they were producing for the last millage proposal. And myself personally, I know we live in Michigan, it's starting to get cold right now. And I know it's getting cold because I'm getting a cold.
Bless you, yes.
Yeah, I'm all clogged up when the leaves fall, my sinuses start dripping too. Anyway, why do I have bike lanes? Okay, bicycle transport. 80% of the time in Michigan is possible if we had, I'm waxing crazy here and we've got to close the show, but it's appropriate to be crazy at the end of the show and then people can tune you out right away, you know, and say, well, I haven't missed anything. I just turn him off. He's already crazy. We should close a few roads. Yeah. They don't even have to repair them. The bikes can veer around the potholes. Okay. Pick a road. But I'm thinking Michigan Avenue. That's radical. But you can ride Michigan Avenue all the way to Ann Arbor. Straight shot. And there's potholes, but by God, the bikes can go around them. And you say, well, cars will have to go some other place. That's okay. They'll find their way. There's been many plans in many cities where they close a whole road, and it's amazing how the car transport people, they're not all waiting bunched up on one or two roads. They spread out. They spread out. And wouldn't that be fantastic? And everybody says, well, you know, there's these plans for bike paths up through the woods and recreate. I said, they're all for recreation. We need them for transportation. I hate to be anti-Ford here, but Ford should have designed bicycles years ago, too, if they want. I mean, seriously, bicycles are clean. They're healthy. You can ride them in Michigan 80% of the time, folks. And even if you're going a distance, if you have an unrestricted bike path, you can go 10, 15 miles an hour. And it's safe, you know. And I'm talking about a whole road, though, too. That would be the ideal. But even bike paths with enough education, how much does that cost to build? Almost nothing. Almost nothing compared to the plans that they were tossing out before.
And I know you're half joking about closing Michigan, but I like your bike plan. I think that's one of the things we need to do with West Downtown Dearborn is we need to make it more accessible from people living in the neighborhoods to get downtown. I know we got to close.
I can't even get from my home in East Dearborn to Henry Ford College without having to go against the traffic from the Fairlane Town Center.
Yeah, West Downtown Dearborn in particular, I've always said it needs to be a place, a destination where people stop so they can shop and eat, as opposed to a thoroughfare where people just go through to get somewhere else. We need to figure out a way, not close it down, obviously, but some way to slow it down, make it more accessible, a destination where people can eat, shop, and play as opposed to a freeway right through somewhere else, you know?
Well, it's been a great honor to have you here, Regan Ford, tossing out ideas, making comments, giving opinions equal to or better than mine most of the time. I really appreciate that. I need that to hold me in check. Thank you for letting me be a little crazy at the end there. So we're going to close the show now. We didn't even get to some of our comparisons about how Michigan stood up with the voters of Dearborn in terms of percentages and what happened nationally. But next week, Anthony Perry, he is the head of the political science area here at Henry Ford College. We'll get a real political scientist on the show for the first half hour, and he can tell me where my opinions really went astray. So we're looking forward to that that insight from our friendly political scientist here at Henry Ford College. So we have to end the show, and thank you again, Regan Ford, for being on the air with us today. Keep up your energy, folks. Yes, the election is over, but it doesn't mean you can't still make a difference in your community. Whoever you voted for, it doesn't matter. There's a lot of things to be done and a lot of things we have to do. So we'll definitely be talking more about that in the future. And of course, Regan Ford, congratulations, not only being president of the Rotary, but a very active citizen with your neighborhood association and with your opinions that you formally express in the paper. So continue that good work too, please.
Thank you, Jay. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me. Can I just say one thing real quick? I know there's a lot of young people out there who are nervous about the way the presidential election turned out. And I just want to caution people to just don't be scared of the future. Give the man a chance. And, you know, it's America. Our government's designed so that no one person has all the power. We have justices. We have separation of powers. The sun's still going to rise, and it's going to set in the west. And I just caution all the young people out there who may be afraid not to, and just see where it goes.
Okay. And give the women a chance, too, by the way. Yeah, okay. Here's Leonard Cohen, a song from his second from last album, Almost Like the Blues. Following up in just a few moments, Kitty Love and Highway 61, the blues show here on WHFR Dearborn. Torture, and there's killing, and there's all my bad reviews.